on vaccinating. That's the message today from public health officials after the J&J jab is put on pause. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, the latest on the local vaccination effort after the CDC pauses administration of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. What are your questions about this? Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, it's National Gardening Day. Tips from one local expert on how to start your own backyard garden and how you can be part of all the fun at opening day and beyond this season with the jumbo shrimp. That's coming up soon. First, though, the latest numbers on the pandemic. Between Monday and Tuesday, the number of cases of coronavirus in Florida increased by over 9,000. Active hospitalizations also ticked up, and the death toll rose again as well. It stands at 34,120. About 7.4 million Florida residents have received at least one dose of a vaccine, meanwhile. And the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration said Tuesday they are recommending what they call a pause in the use of the single-dose Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine out of an abundance of caution. They want to review reports of exceedingly rare cases of potentially dangerous blood clots in only a handful of patients. The two agencies say they're reviewing data involving six reported cases in the U.S. of a rare and severe type of blood clot in individuals after receiving the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Now, we learned all this yesterday. Today, public health experts have a message. They are stressing to everyone not to be thrown by this and to still go get either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Mia Jones, CEO at Agape Family Health, based at their vaccination site based at Edward Waters College. Mia, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you. And Dr. Sunil Joshi back with us once again. He's president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. Dr. Joshi, good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And as we talk about the latest on the vaccination rollout, what are your questions about the pause in the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Have you already been vaccinated? Are you vaccine hesitant? Give us a call. It's 549-2937, 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa N. Jax. And our Facebook page is open. Mia Jones, if I may, I'd like to begin with you. You've been vaccinating hundreds a day at Edward Waters College. Yesterday, the state stopped all administration of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Does that change procedures at all at your location? What's the latest from where you are?
For us, we have maintained Moderna since February when we opened up at Edward Waters. And so it was only last Friday that we received any of the Johnson & Johnson. And so we stopped using Johnson & Johnson on yesterday. So we had only used it Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We were also using it for our homebound patient that requested it. And so we stopped using it on yesterday for them as well. So it really hasn't changed much for us at Edward Waters. We will continue to provide Moderna 7 days a week from 9 to 5.
And still seeing heavy demand outside your location? I've seen people lining up waiting to get the vaccine over there when I stopped by.
It's not as heavy as it was, and I think that was because there were so many additional sites that have opened up.
Okay.
Now that you can go to the pharmacies and you can go, we had Gateway open in Regency and some of the others, but then the state also had their pop-up sites that they were administering the Johnson & Johnson, and so I think a lot of people started looking for those pop-ups because it was, as they say, one and done. And that took a toll on the numbers that we were seeing. But we maintain a consistent commitment to making sure that we're able to provide the Moderna.
Dr. Joshi, is this news concerning to you as someone who's very pro-vaccination that because of the pause in administering this one kind of vaccine, that might give people an argument in their minds to not go get vaccinated. There's been criticism of this move, too, since only six people had an adverse reaction. What about all this?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest concerns for us is that the vaccine hesitancy movement may start to increase as a result of this. So that does concern me. You know, keep in mind that we had been doing really well here in the United States and also here in Northeast Florida. Like Mia was mentioning a second ago, you know, people were kind of being pushed or going towards the Johnson & Johnson vaccine as a one-and-done vaccine. Get it done. You're done with it. You don't have to worry about going back. And in fact, we had a 16% increase in vaccinated people getting vaccines here in Northeast Florida in the last week compared to the previous week. And so there was definitely momentum. Even in the United States, we vaccinated 4.5 million people on one day last Friday, which was a crazy high number. And so there was definitely movement, momentum for people to get vaccinated, and this happened. And now the hesitancy I can see is coming back in people. And that's why it's so important for us to educate folks on how unlikely and how rare this is. You know, six people out of a total of 7 million who have been vaccinated is exceedingly rare, and you're more likely to get struck by lightning than you are to have a blood clot related to this vaccine.
Do you think it was a mistake for the feds to pause Johnson & Johnson?
No, I don't think it was a mistake. And the reason for that is this is part of what, you know, what also can help vaccine hesitancy, in the sense that people were concerned that the FDA or the CDC just wanted to get people vaccinated and not thinking about the overall health outcomes. Well, this right here proves that as soon as they saw a little blip that made them concerned, they took a pause so that they can investigate it further to make sure that they can understand whether or not these cases of blood clots were truly related to the vaccine, or were there some other risk factors that these women had that put them at risk of having the blood clots. And also by pausing, they're able to educate healthcare providers on the fact that these blood clots can happen after vaccinating and what to do and what not to do in these cases. So no, I agree with the pause, and I'm hoping that later today, after they've had a chance to investigate this, we can go back to giving the J&J vaccine tomorrow.
Oh, you think it could be as soon as tomorrow?
I mean, there is some talk that they're meeting today, and they're going to, I believe, have a press conference later this evening about what they've learned. And so the sooner that we can get back to giving the J&J vaccine, as long as they feel that it is safe, the better for everybody.
549-2937. Give us a call. We'll go to your calls in a moment as the feds pause the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But Pfizer and Moderna are still options for vaccination. Mia Jones, before we go to callers, what else can you tell us about the effort at Agape Center at EWC? As you said, not only are you serving walk-ups and people that come to the college, you're also going into homebound situations, people that cannot physically get to a vaccination site.
Yes. We recognize that we do have a large number of citizens within the Jacksonville area that are homebound. Someone comes in to assist them and their families and in their care on a daily basis. And so we've received set up partnerships with a number of healthcare organizations, both insurance payers as well as hospitals and doctor's offices, so that we can go in and provide them and their caregivers with the vaccination right there in their home. So we have started that. In addition to that, we are still going out into the community, and your listeners can go to agapecovidhealth.com, and they'll see where our Wellness on Wheels bus will be. And we will be administering at those locations as well, and they are welcome to come to those.
As we talk about the latest on vaccinations on this show this morning, give us a call. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as we've been talking about, has been paused for the moment by federal health officials. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are still an option if you have not yet been vaccinated. Give us a call. Have you been vaccinated? What are your questions about this? Are you vaccine hesitant? It's 549-2937. Johnson is on the west side. Hi, Johnson. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Your guest, not Mia Jones, but the gentleman, I just wanted to say that it sounds a bit condescending when you say it's a little kerfuffle. As someone who is premenopausal and obviously a woman, I don't think having a blood clot, even if it's just something that doesn't happen to the majority of the population, can be called a kerfuffle. And I just found it a little bit condescending that a male, specifically a white male, would say something like that, because when something goes wrong with their medical situation,
well, Dr. Joshi isn't white, but go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm not saying I don't know if he's white or not, but I'm saying I don't think he is a black male. And even if he wasn't a black male, even if he was a black male, he's a male. And they're saying that the Johnson & Johnson is really affecting premenopausal women. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of not nice to say it's a kerfuffle when it's a blood clot.
Okay. Thank you for that. Dr. Joshi, women are scared about this. What about that?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And so I don't know, she may have misinterpreted my thought on that, but it is important that this is why it's important that they took the pause on this so that we can investigate, or that the FDA and the CDC can investigate as to why this seems to be only involving women in the premenopausal age and birth and childbearing age, and see if there are certain risk factors that might indeed put them at risk for having the blood clots. Against the part of the pause is also to say that, look, if there are certain risk factors that these six women had in common, then maybe those are the people, women who have those same risk factors, maybe should not be getting the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I mean, these are things that we're going to learn as they investigate it further. So it is critically important that they investigate it. And I think the reason I was bringing up the data is so that we can understand the fact that this is very, very rare. Again, less than 1 in 1 million people who received the vaccine had a blood clot associated with it. And so I do think absolutely 100% it needs to be taken seriously, and that's why they paused the Johnson & Johnson to review this.
Mm-hmm. Haley at the Beaches. Hi, Haley. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
My comment is I am 25-year-old, and there's just, I think, a lot of uncertainty on the Johnson & Johnson and the different vaccinations that have come out. And I think that people maybe my age just want to know for sure that it's something that they don't have to be afraid of. But I'm also afraid of my brother-in-law, my sister, who got the Johnson & Johnson. Yeah.
And so have you been vaccinated?
I haven't. I would like to, but I just don't see an option that fits me right now.
Why not get the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, Haley?
I haven't been reading too much, but I heard a little speculation about maybe bringing along infertility. So I don't know if that's something to worry about. I'm not educated enough on it.
Okay. Mia Jones.
Maybe more advertising?
Sure. Mia Jones, can you reassure Haley that the vaccines you're offering and that the other sites are offering will not interfere with her future plans to have kids?
Thank you, Melissa. And Haley, what I will tell you is we recommend that you go ahead and get the vaccine. I have not heard from any of the various organizations and the literature that I've read about the possibility that you've spoken of. But what I will say is that we've vaccinated moms who are pregnant. I've seen that. And I've also seen those that are still breastfeeding being able to be vaccinated. And so I would say speak with your gynecologist, and they may have some additional information that may be able to ease your concerns. But really, we have to be able to make sure that we're paying attention to the activities that happen once people are getting vaccinated, and we know what our baseline is before we get vaccinated, so that if you've got to tell somebody that something's not right, you can tell them what your baseline is, and you can go from there.
Jay in St. Augustine. Hello, Jay. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
My My concern is as a lot of the other women, is I've heard that there has been some adverse events of miscarriage in some pregnant women that have received the vaccine, as well as my other half of the question is in concern for any type of adverse event of any sort from any of the manufacturers. What is the recourse that a citizen would have should they have a significant adverse event? What would be the process of what they would need to do to have that rectified?
Jay, thanks for that. You know, Dr. Joshi, in general, vaccine manufacturers have broad protections from lawsuits, although there is a vaccine court in this country where people can bring complaints. But, you know, if you could answer his question about that, and then also these concerns that people have about how vaccines are, this speculation that it could affect fertility or affect pregnancy.
Right. And so, you know, and Mia had brought up a point earlier about this fertility, and that's, you know, I think that that is, again, a rumor that got kind of got spread through social media as well, that, but, you know, there is no data to suggest that that the vaccines are leading to fertility. In fact, there were some women in the original studies who did get pregnant while they were in the study after they'd received the vaccine. What we do know is that the infection itself can adversely affect pregnant women. So a pregnant woman who is infected by COVID-19 is more likely to have premature labor and also have some more adverse serious illness during pregnancy as well. So again, you have to weigh the risks and benefits of the vaccine versus getting the viral infection itself. And that's, again, part of why vaccines are so important, is to minimize serious consequences of the virus to begin with. So I think that you do have to weigh those risks and benefits. Talk to your OBGYN about it before you get the vaccine. In terms of recourse from reactions to vaccines, remember there is a reporting system, so it is important if somebody does have what they feel is an adverse event from the vaccine, to discuss it with their healthcare provider, who can also help report that to the vaccine adverse events profile. And you would indeed still have some potential legal recourse in the future. That's, you know, attorneys always do find ways to help folks out with that.
Lots of tweets about this. And basically, they're talking about the fact, Mia Jones, that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine primarily seemed to have adverse reactions in women, six that we know of. Here's a couple of tweets for you, Mia.
Okay.
I know it sounds crass, but on a purely clinical basis, what justifies stopping the J&J shot for men? Here's another tweet. Could men get the J&J and women get Pfizer Moderna? We never test enough the differences in women and kids in this country. So are we not realizing maybe that there are gender differences in how people are responding to this vaccine? And is that something that we can learn from as we watch this unfold?
I think it's really important for us to pay attention. We know that these were all approved on an emergency basis. And so that's where it really becomes critical for us to know our bodies and know that baseline, but also to pay attention to what's happening after you get your vaccination. So it's my understanding that all six of these women, it happened anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks after they had gotten their vaccination. So we want people to sign up with the CDC for what they call V-Safe. And you can report in any adverse reactions that you may be having and letting them know. But I think it's really important to realize that the reason they're putting it on pause is because they are looking at how it's affecting males, females, and being able to make sure that this is the right thing for us as a community, us as a country, to be able to continue with the Johnson & Johnson and it not be something that starts to negatively affect a larger number of people. One of the other things that I recently read about was that when you go into the hospital, you need to let, if you find that you're having the symptoms of a blood clot, you need to let them know that you've had the Johnson & Johnson vaccination so that they don't give you, I think it's heparin, Dr. Joshi, that would normally be used for a blood clot, because that's where I think that they're having some major concerns.
Dr. Joshi.
And that's also why this pause was so important. As Mia said, you know, it's also to educate healthcare providers about, hey, look, you know, normally when we hear about somebody having a blood clot, we typically give them blood thinners or heparin, things of that sort, where in these particular cases, it's a different type of blood clot, and you need to inhibit one of the clotting factors for it to work better. And so that's a completely different treatment regimen, whereas the heparin itself may actually hurt the patient. So again, that was part of the reason to pause it, so that we can educate everybody about the signs and symptoms of a severe outcome.
All right, one more call. Chris in Green Cove Springs. Hi, Chris, go ahead.
Good morning. My question is pretty straightforward, and I can take my answer offline. When we hear that this very rare blood clot affected 6 women out of several million that were administered, I don't know what to do with that number, because I don't know what the incidence of this type of blood clot is in the general population who didn't receive the vaccine. In other words, is this the same, worse? I don't know what to do.
Okay. Mia, can you answer Chris's question?
I can't.
Okay. How about Dr. Joshi?
It is a very, very good question. And so in the general population, the risk of having a blood clot is 3 to 4 in every 1 million. So every 3 to 4 people out of 1 million and have a chance of developing a blood clot, whereas in this case, it's less than 1 in 1 million. So it's even less than what's seen in the general population. But it is important to note that blood clots in the general population, that 3 or 4 in 1 million, 75% of the time it does involve women. So again, another very important factor to keep in mind here.
Okay. So the bottom line, Mia, is that vaccination opportunities are all over the place, including at your site at Edward Waters College.
And they can also make sure that they look for the Wellness on Wheels bus and see where we are by going to Agape COVID Health. And we are out in the community in various sides of town every single day. And Edward Waters College, as I said before, is open 9 to 5 every day.
Thank you so much, Mia Jones, CEO of Agape Family Health, and Dr. Sunil Joshi. He's president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Bye-bye.
Well, much more still ahead later. A local athlete is a top prospect in the WNBA draft. We'll have a closer look at that, but up next.
One most important thing that everyone should really consider is the season. The seasonality of vegetables is really important when you're growing.
How you can celebrate National Gardening Day today, right in your own backyard. We'll be right back. Well, today is National Gardening Day. It's designed to encourage gardeners and would-be gardeners to pick up a shovel and some seeds and kick off a beautiful year of homegrown bounty. For inspiration, I spoke with local corporate chef Steve Stallone. He started a vegetable garden in his backyard last year, right around the start of the pandemic. Hi, Steve. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
So you are a corporate chef and a gardener. On National Gardening Day, as we kind of celebrate the growth in people growing their own groceries, especially in this pandemic. You've got some advice for all of us on how to start a backyard garden. How should we even get started if it seems overwhelming for people? What do you recommend?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think everybody had the same idea in the beginning of the pandemic in 2020 as we all ran out. We all were nervous about where grocery was heading, and everybody wanted to start a garden. And we did what everybody would normally do, is we'd go out to the big box stores and Home Depot and Lowe's and Walmart, and we just go and buy whatever we thought we saw on the shelf, and we try to create a soil mix and get things in the ground. But there's so much research that needs to be done with growing vegetables and fruits, and one most important thing that everyone should really consider is the season. The seasonality of vegetables is really important when you're growing, just because things just don't do well in the heat, and they also don't do very well in the rain. So you really have to manage those environmental features when you're growing vegetables. So to get started on gardening, you really need to plan out your space. So planning is really important. There's nothing wrong with getting a piece of paper and literally use a measuring tape and measure out areas of your property of where you want the garden, and have a visual of what you're actually going to put in there, and make sure you leave yourself enough space in between plants. You know, when you put a plant in soil, it's very small. You know, you're starting with a very small plant. And you tend to want to put them close to each other because, you know, like, oh, it's not taking up much room. You know, it's small. But you have to think about the future growth. It's going to be 3 months before a lot of these vegetables even begin to fruit. And by that time, the plant has 10 times grown the space that it's in.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is those plants all get clumped together. And that's where you get a lot of that moisture, and the fungus builds up, and the mildew builds up, and then you get the diseases, and then the pests come, and you are just constantly battling one thing after the next. My recommendation is to start small with a small variety of items. Don't go out and buy every single seed on the shelf. Buy a couple of items that you know are going to be easy, you know, some cucumbers, some tomatoes, some cabbages, some carrots. And then really research each vegetable and learn how to grow each one individually. You can't just put the same soil in the ground and expect each vegetable to grow the same in that soil. Everything takes a certain amount of energy. It takes a certain amount of space. So you really have to know your plan before you start.
Plan ahead. Such a good piece of advice. So if someone listening to this on National Gardening Day is inspired to get started and maybe plant a little bit, what is a good type of fruit or vegetable or item to plant right now?
So right now in my garden, I have all the hot climate vegetables. I have the cucumbers, the tomatoes, the peppers, eggplant, corn. Those are the items that are really going to need a lot of sun. And they really thrive in the heat. Items that are not going to do well right now are going to be lettuces. They're going to be broccoli, cauliflower, collard greens, you know, winter vegetables, things that people like. And they say, we're going to try to grow it in this time of year. It's just not going to happen. Broccoli, there's a term called bolting, B-O-L-T. It's when a plant gets too hot, and instead of making that really nice broccoli bunch, what it'll do is it'll shoot up, and it'll actually make flowers instead because of all the heat. So you'll wonder, why am I not getting broccoli? And it's because your plant has bolted because of the heat. You just can't do it. It's not because you're getting too much sun. It's not because of the bugs. It's not because of any other environmental factors. It's just the time of the season and the heat. You just can't do it. If you were doing it indoors and in a climate-controlled environment, I think that's a whole different story. But we're just, you know, we're sticking to the basics here.
Now, you've got a pretty sizable backyard garden at your place in St. Johns County. Of course, you are a corporate chef, so you love to play around with all these vegetables. Let me ask you this. For anyone listening who has a really small backyard or even just a back porch, they can still do this. You can do a little container garden and still experiment with this, right?
Absolutely. Container gardening is great. You can really control the ingredients in your containers. One of the things about container gardening is you want to make sure you try to automate watering. Even if you're planting in the ground as well. All my garden is automated on my auto sprinkler system, so I have it all on drip irrigation. But plants need a consistent amount of water. They don't need a ton of water all the time. They just need it to be consistent in the soil. So, for instance, if you're growing tomatoes and you water it on a Monday, and let's just say you get busy and you forget about it and you come back on, say, Thursday and your plant looks a little wilted, and now you just flood it with a bunch of water, what happens is that plant wants to suck up all that moisture. And what happens is it actually splits all your tomatoes because all the moisture is going to come into that tomato and the skin just can't hold it and it bursts the tomatoes. And you wonder, well, what happened? Why are my tomatoes splitting? It's just because the watering cycle is not consistent. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah, it sounds like I could tell by the way you said that you learned it the hard way.
I learned that because all the rain we had last year at the end of the season, that's what did it. We had like 2-3 weeks of hard, heavy rain and all my tomatoes split.
One last question. How do you keep your vegetables safe from raccoons? We live in Springfield, and I tried a garden a couple of years ago, and right when it was about to be ready to eat all my veggies, raccoons came in and ate it all one night, and I couldn't believe it. I thought, here I am in the middle of the city, and the raccoons still got my garden. What should we do to
really?
Yeah.
Well, my backyard, I have a whole bunch of different environmental features for all the wildlife. You know, I have the bird feeders, I have things for the squirrels, I have hummingbird feeders. So I created a whole environment back there that everything has its own kind of little space. So I keep the birds over in one corner and the squirrels in another corner. And I have a bird bath in the garden because, you know, birds are going to naturally look for water. And they actually try to get into the vegetables to find water. So I keep a bird bath over there so they, you know, if they need water, they can go over there. But we actually did have a rodent problem last year, which was some small little mice. And that really started from our compost pile. So anything to get rid of rodents and keep rodents away is, I would say, keep your garden very tidy and clean. Don't leave a bunch of extra things laying around. Don't leave, you know, a bunch of dead plants on the floor. Anything that is ready to harvest, pick it. You know, as soon as it's ready to harvest, don't let it over-ripen on the plants and kind of fall off onto the floor and get diseased, because that's what will attract the pests. As long as you keep it clean and tidy and everything disease-free, you won't have any of the rodents.
Well, thanks for all of this. It is National Gardening Day. Hopefully this inspires some people. Stephen Stallone, he's a gardener and a corporate chef. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Well, opening day is still a few weeks out, but the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, now a AAA team, have big plans for the upcoming season. Scott Kornberg is with the team, and he's on the line to tell us more. Hey, Scott.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Good to have you. So single game tickets for the Shrimp go on sale 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 21st, a week from today. Opening day is in May, but you have a lot planned this season beyond just the games themselves. lots on the agenda for the shrimp, beginning with this sponsorship that you have with FIS and donations to a local charity. You want the fans to choose the charity. Let's begin with that. How is that effort going?
Well, Monday, we announced that and really excited because FIS is an incredibly innovative company, and they've chosen their headquarters here in Jacksonville, and which just really even boosting that partnership we've had with them for a long time even further. And so we're really looking forward to kind of adding on that community element in this regard. And obviously that's something that's incredibly important to our organization, from things we do with just donating our time as a staff to partnerships we have with, for example, Andrew Jackson High School, in which we do an internship-like program with some of the students there called the Jackson Five, and allow them to get real-world experience while they're still in high school. So anything we could do, obviously, to bolster the community is our top priority, because we realize, you know, that's the impact that we have as an organization. Yes, it's the games. Yes, it's the promotions. But most importantly, it's what can we do to benefit Jacksonville and Northeast Florida. And so this is a small way of being able to do that.
Right. You're going to give fans the opportunity to vote for one of four organizations to get these charity dollars, either Operation New Hope, KIPP, Schools of Jacksonville, Girls Who Code, and Junior Achievement of North Florida. How can the fans decide that? How can they vote? Oh, did we lose you, Scott? Oh, I think we might have lost him. Well, as we attempt to get Scott back, we're talking about the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. Tickets go on sale for opening day a week from today. And opening day, of course, will be in early May. You can get your tickets at jackshrimp.com. We were just talking about the Shrimp's partnership with FIS. They're going to take a penny from every transaction that they make over the next 5 years and donate up to $10,000 to a local charity. And you, the baseball fans, can pick that charity. It will be either Operation New Hope, KIPP Schools, Girls Who Code, or Junior Achievement. Now, this is something I want to talk about, their theme nights. They're going to have these really fun theme nights along with a bunch of fireworks nights at the ballpark. Everything from the Dunder Mifflin theme night to dropping our drawers on Father's Day to the Shrimp Olympic Games to Hanukkah in July. There's going to be a Harry Potter night. There's going to be a Texas Hold'em night. And my personal favorite, Friday, June 11th, the Gen X Olympics. This sounds like a lot of fun. And again, fireworks shows at the ballpark. Hanukkah in July. This is all great stuff that the Jumbo Shrimp are doing. I really like the idea, too, that you can get a Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp specialty tag. Go to the Duval County Tax Collector's Office and get one. Try that. And I hope we have Scott back. Do we have? I think he's calling back in here. This is sort of the peril we have doing all of these interviews on the show over the last year or so and beyond, on the phone or on Zoom, because we really just cannot have any in-studio guests right now due to the pandemic, although that may change by this summer. And that is why I am sitting here talking about the shrimp instead of Scott, who is the expert. Oh, wait, I think we have him now. Hey, Scott. Hi, Scott. Are you there? Hey, Scott. Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened with our connection there.
No problem. I was just telling everyone about the theme nights you guys are doing, too, which sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're really excited about them. And obviously, we've got like our staples that are huge hits, like our Friday fireworks shows are back. We're doing actually several different Saturday fireworks shows in the month of May, the month of June. And then select dates in July and September. Thirsty Thursdays are back. The Family Sundays from by Baptist Health are back. And obviously the big hit is the Saturday giveaways. But, yeah, we've got some really big theme nights coming. Hanukkah in July is kind of a funny one.
That sounds fun. And the Gen X Olympics, those are the two that really caught my eye.
And we've got a Harry Potter one, which is really cool, a Dunder Mifflin Jacksonville branch. We've got some really creative people on our staff, and it amazes me. We have meetings every single off season, and obviously this is the longest off season ever, but we just kind of throw ideas at the wall and see what sticks, and we're really fortunate that we've got some awesome ideas coming, and I think people will really get a kick out of this year.
Yeah, I mean, that is the fun of a night at a minor league ballpark. It's zany, it's fun, it's creative. But let's stress that you guys are now a AAA team. Jacksonville will field a AAA team for the first time since 1968, beginning on opening day, May 4th. Really exciting.
It is. And you know what? This doesn't happen without the support. You know, I talked about it before the call ended before, the support in our community. And that's been returned from us, and we're very, very fortunate for that. But we just have amazing support from our fans, amazing support from just in general people in the community. And then you add in that to the fact that, okay, they draw really well. People really are into the jumbo shrimp. And Jacksonville is an extremely fast-growing city. And in normal times, they get a huge tourism base. And it just makes perfect sense for us to be competing with teams in Nashville and Buffalo and Charlotte and those kinds of cities. So it's something that we're incredibly excited about. In the 60s, when Jacksonville was a AAA team, we had several different Hall of Famers play with the Jacksonville Suns, like Tom Seaver and Nolan Ryan. And actually, they won, Melissa, the 1968 championship. So in a way, we are defending our title just about 50-plus years later.
Let me quickly make note, it's not really related to you guys, but the old Negro Leagues baseball park in Jacksonville, where Hank Aaron used to play, was renamed in his honor this week. So a long-storied tradition of baseball in this community. Get your tickets now. They go on sale next week, jackshrimp.com. And Scott, it sounds like it's just going to be a great season.
Yeah, we're so happy to have baseball back, and we're really thankful for, again, the support for our community, and we're really looking forward to seeing everybody at 1-2-1 Financial Ballpark beginning on May 4th.
All right, let's play ball. Thanks, Scott, and have a great time with it.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys. I appreciate your time.
And I stand corrected. Tickets go on sale, according to producer Heather Schatz, today. The old news release I got is apparently wrong. She's saying, no, Melissa, it's next week. You were right. Okay, it's next week, people, the 21st. We'll get it together. Still to come, what's good this Wednesday, including only the second woman ever from Jacksonville to be drafted into the WNBA. We'll tell you about it next.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at vickerslanding.com. Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com. Lee and Kate's Glass, family-owned and operated for 95 years. Lee and Kate's Glass is your source for upgrading your home's glass, from shower doors and mirrors to windows and tabletops. Learn more at leeandkatesglass.com.
Groove to Electro Lounge Radio around the clock, Allow the sounds of chill out, down tempo, new jazz, and reggae to relax and inspire you. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
I'm Tanya Mosley. Dozens of White Lives Matter rallies were planned for cities across the country last weekend, but hardly anyone showed up. What's behind the poor turnout? One possible answer, far-right movements are growing more disorganized as they get pushed further into the fringes. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Shootings are traumatizing for everyone, but for children, the impact can shape their lives and their development.
We're talking about millions of children who are affected by gun violence every year. Not hundreds, not thousands, it's millions.
Author John Woodrow Cox on America's Children Under Fire, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. This is an exciting story. Jacksonville's own Renia Davis is expected to be selected in the top five of Thursday night's WNBA draft. She will be only the second woman ever from Jacksonville drafted into the WNBA. First Coast News sports director Chris Porter is on the line to tell us more about it. Hey, Chris.
Good morning, Melissa. I tell you, it is an exciting time in the city of Jacksonville, the First Coast for women, period. Because Renia Davis, Jacksonville's own Reebok grad, is going to not only be selected, but she's projected to be a lottery pick. And let me tell you something. Tomorrow we're going to kick off. We've been really covering it for the last couple of weeks, but we're going to kick off our day-long coverage tomorrow on Good Morning Jacksonville. And in a time where we're trying to get back to some sense of normalcy when you've gone through this COVID pandemic and all that kind of good stuff, if you need to be inspired, if you need some hope, if you need to believe and not just dreaming, but dreaming big again, despite whatever the obstacles may be in front of you, Renia Davis' story is going to do that. Let me give you a little insight, a nugget, and the kind of stories we're going to be sharing with you tomorrow. This young lady, who has won numerous awards in the high school level, the collegiate level, when she told her mom at 10 years old that she wanted to play basketball, her mom, Sharetta, told her, no, Renia, girls don't play basketball. You can't play basketball. She did not tell Renia that because she believed that, because she said herself she's a basketball fan. But she knew once Renia put her mind to it that she was going to excel and she was going to be all over the place. Because remember, Sharetta is a single mom of four. But check this out. She tried to sign Renia up for the Police Athletic League. Renia, she signed up too late, so she had to do it next year. Renia reminded her. But let me tell you how the story gets better. When she started playing, and this woman is about to be one of the top picks in the draft, she couldn't dribble, she couldn't shoot, she couldn't pass. I'm going to say that again. She couldn't dribble, she couldn't shoot, she couldn't pass. But her coaches tell me they nicknamed her Desire because she desired to be good. She desired to be great. She put in the work. She came early. She stayed late. She soaked in all of the knowledge and learned the game. At 11 years old, Melissa, she said she wanted to play at the University of Tennessee. She did it. She wanted to play in the WNBA. She will be playing in the WNBA. So I'm telling you, we have so many great stories like that. When I tell you, if you want to be inspired, if you want to believe that you can dream and dream big, no matter what your skill set is, you want to tune in and start tomorrow morning on Good Morning Jacksonville.
What a great story, Chris. And now, Renia, as you said, she's a Reebok girl and the only the second female player from Jacksonville to ever make it into the WNBA draft. Is that right?
Absolutely correct. Erica White was the first. She also graduated from Reebok High School. She was drafted in the 2008 WNBA draft. If you know high school girls basketball, if you're from these parts, when you say Reebok, Lady Press, and Trojans, you know this is a prime time program. To give you an example, Renia won three state championships and a national title during her four-year stint over at Reebok. When I talked about Erica White, the first woman who was drafted to the WNBA in 2008, she played for Reebok as well. At one point, Melissa, they won 109 straight games.
Man. Just amazing athletes. And, you know, you're right, too, Chris. We need a story like this right now. It's been such a tough year. So it's so exciting to see a young athlete from Jacksonville go right to the top like this, and what a role model she is for other kids to show that you have to put in the work to see the success.
No doubt about it. And her story will not only inspire kids, but it will inspire adults. I mean, just think about it. I really want people to think about how tough it is to make it to the highest level in the game. And when she started, because, you know, so sometimes, Melissa, it's not that we can't achieve. A lot of times we defeat ourselves before we even get started because we feel like, I don't have the experience. I don't have the talent. At 11 years old, when this girl could not dribble, pass, or shoot, she said, I want to play at the University of Tennessee. Tennessee has won 8 national championships. Everybody knows about the history of Pat Summitt in Tennessee. She said, I want to play in the WNBA. And she put in the work, and she did it. And here's the funny nugget. Her coaches at Powell told me that her mom, Sharetta, would always complain about, you're keeping her too long, you're keeping her too late. And the coach said, we worked with her mom, and we worked on her mom, and eventually the coach said, listen, if you just trust this process, one day we'll be proud. Well, that day has come. Mm. And on Thursday night, her mom, who I just spoke to before I got on the radio with you this morning, her mom telling me, Chris, I can't even sleep. I haven't been able to sleep the last couple of days. I'm so proud of Renai. She's so humble. She's not about the spotlight. She's just all about doing her job. And the coaches say the same thing about it, even in the interactions I've had with her, because she was our 2017 First Coast News Athlete of the Year. She's so humble. But on the court, she's a beast.
I bet. Oh, yeah. No doubt. Chris, I encourage everyone to check out Good Morning Jacksonville about this tomorrow and watch the draft, too, because Jacksonville's own Renia Davis will be only the second female athlete from Jacksonville drafted this week into the WNBA. He is First Coast News Sports Director Chris Porter. It's great to hear your excitement about this, Chris. Thanks so much for letting us know.
Thank you. Coverage all day tomorrow. We hope you guys tune in.
Check it out, everyone. And thanks for listening to us. Thanks to all of our guests and callers, too, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.